Good morning, everybody. My presentation gives another example of community health workers program in a quite different setting. There is no relationships to disclose. The contribution of community health workers to the implementation of comprehensive primary health care in rural settings in Iran. I would like to thank my colleagues, Dr. Ghulam Reza Haidari and Professor Fram Bam, who helped a lot in the technical and practical aspects of this research. This slide gives an overview of the country where Iran is located in Middle East region with a population of over 70 million. About 32% of population lives in rural area and about 65,000 villages. This slide shows the structure of primary health care at district level, which starts at the top from a health deputy at provincial level in the provincial university and then separated in urban and rural health centers. And in urban health centers, there's health posts and then health houses under rural health centers. And these health houses are the focus of this study. Health house is the most peripheral health facilities in the country, located in rural areas, in villages. And it's the place that community health workers work and serve rural communities. And this network, the primary healthcare network, actually established after the Alma-Ata declaration in 1979. So it's a well-established and a long-term program in Iran. And here it shows the relationship of community health workers in Iran, which in Farsi they are called behvars. And where they stand within the health system and the rural community. So there is a strong relationship between this group of health worker with the health system. They are part of the health system, they are a staff member, they are paid by health system. Health system provides training, supervision, and incentives and pay their salaries. On the other hand, they implement different health programs and collect information, and actually they bridge health system with rural communities. And on the other side, they are from their community, they work for their own community, they reside in their community in rural areas, and they provide basic health care to community members and assist to mobilize community resources and build local capacities in within rural area. And also the community members provides recognition and they support behvars and they contribute to the even to the recruitment of behvars and their selection. These are some photos of the health house, the building of the health house in Iran, and a community health worker providing health service to rural and different health programs from childcare, maternal health, environmental health, occupational health. And there are some examples of how they work in rural communities and with people, and also health education. Say they've got different health education programs. The next few slides shows briefly how the main health indicators improved in Iran over the last few years. Life expectancy had a significant improvement both in male and female. Neonatal mortality rate and under 5 mortality rate, which again had a significant improvement, and maternal mortality rate. And although many other factors, of course, had strong contribution to these improvements, like overall economic growth or improvement in literacy rate or other social factors, but it's strongly believed that particularly in rural area, the contribution of this group of community health workers called Behvars, they had a strong contribution to health gains in rural areas. And what we aimed in this study was to see how do they think, how this group of people, community health workers, think about their contribution to comprehensive primary health care and different aspects of comprehensive primary health care. And by comprehensive primary health care, actually, we meant the principles that has been defined by WHO as equity in access to basic health services, comprehensive care with an emphasis on disease prevention and health promotion, community participation in health programs, intersectoral action and appropriate technology, and the elements of programs that can be running in within a comprehensive approach to primary health care, like health education, maternal and child health, and different other health programs. What we did in this study, actually, it was a qualitative study, interviewing with this group of community health workers in Iran. So first we had a Behvars Pro where we collected information about community health workers throughout the country, and then selecting the study location, recruiting and training the interviewers, questions and the field trips. So in the Behvars Pro where we knew that how many Behvars actually, there are a total of almost 31,000 community health workers working in about 65,000 villages. And there we had the, how they are distributed through the country, their gender, which are female, and they have female and male Behvars, their age, their work experience, and their educational level. And this is the study location, so we tried to recruit a wide group of Behvars from different work experiences, young as well as old Behvars, and in different provinces in Iran, some with lower socioeconomic status, and different ages, and of course, male and females. And then three interviewers did the field trips, and with a total number of 90 interviews in 18 provinces. And what we found in our study was comparing with the principles of comprehensive primary health care, one of the aspects, the equity in access to basic health care services, one of these aspects is the physical access. And this is achieved by the way that the primary healthcare network is designed in Iran. So each health house covers a total population of about 1,500. And if the population is less, they would cover a couple of satellite villages and then four or five health houses will be under the supervision of a rural health center. So actually all the rural population are covered by these health facilities. In terms of language and cultural access, which is another aspect of equity in access, the way that these community health workers are recruited, it ensures the language and cultural access because they are from their community, the family, the rural families and households. Actually, they have a strong contribution to their recruitment. They reside in rural area and they actually there is a consultation with rural family before you know, getting one community health worker for that area. And there is some quote from them that they, because they are from their community members, so they feel that they understand their language, their culture, their traditions very well. And the acceptability of services, which is another aspect of equity of in access to basic health care. And I think this quote very clearly shows how acceptable these community health workers are in rural communities. The level of trust is very high. Actually, they are the first person who community members, rural people go to when they've got any problem. And as you see in here, one of them was saying that even a specialist prescribes something for them, they wouldn't take the medicine unless they come to me and to make sure that it's right for me. So the level of trust is very high and they are very acceptable. One of the principles of comprehensive primary health care, comprehensive approach, is to emphasize on disease prevention and health promotion. Talking with this community health worker, I can say almost all of them mentioned that the importance of health education and their role, the main role as increasing people's awareness, working with people to increase their awareness, to prevent disease and to promote health. And it's in addition to many programs that points at disease prevention. This slide shows a broad range of tasks and responsibilities that community health workers doing and their as their job, and it's increasing over time. So from prenatal, family health, and too many programs. So they are responsible for everything in the rural setting. In terms of community participation, actually, again, based on the trust between these community members and this person as community health workers in the village, there is a close relationship between them, and actually rural community do have intellectual, financial contribution to many health programs, and also in terms of human workforce, so they are volunteer to help in many health programs. And this is some examples of successful community participation, how these community health workers work with community members, mainly in the area of environmental health. And in terms of intersectoral action for health, this health house actually is the health sector within rural community, and there are many other sectors like rural councils, rural governments that they are in close collaboration with community health workers and health houses, and sometimes in some areas the community health workers was actually a member of rural government or rural council, so there is a close collaboration, or working with schools and educational system, and in some areas with agriculture. But the point that we found in this area about intersectoral action and collaborating with other sector, in some parts and some occasions, the nature of collaboration is more like a one-way collaboration. And it's because due to the position of these community health workers within community members and rural, their availability, the level of trust, and their relationship with rural community, actually other sectors use this facility to implement their own programs rather than a two-way collaboration, which help community health workers to implement health programs. So it imposes extra work for community health workers as well. So far, it seems that it's a successful program and address different aspects and different principles of comprehensive primary comprehensive approach to primary health care. However, there are some barriers that mentioned by the most of community health workers we interviewed. One of them was the workload, which as you saw in the last slide, the number of programs that integrating within the primary healthcare system is increasing over time. So non-communicable disease and mental health and occupational health and different programs. Every day a new program is integrating within the system, so it increased the workload of community health workers, high load of data recording, applications. They all were talking about this as a main barrier for their effective performance and contribution to health programs. One of the issues was about the support and supervision support system. Actually, there are one of the barriers, because this supervisory teams or supervision does not provide support and training. Rather, most of them were talking that these teams just come to pick up the weak points, and they don't support us and they don't help us to improve. The incentive system, including financial and non-financial incentives and educational opportunities, because I would like to mention here that the educational level of this community health workers, I didn't go through their training courses because of the limitation in my time, but they've got 2-year training, and they've their educational level is from a high school level, and the older ones had a primary degree, but now they are recruited from a high school degree to some of them were students in bachelor degree or graduate diploma, so they had a undergraduate degree as well. And finally, the facilities, maintenance, drug supply, and physical space of these health houses and their workplaces were mentioned as a barrier for their effective performance. And this is what we were interested to see: how do they define comprehensive primary health care? What's their understanding of comprehensive primary health care? And we got a wide range of responses, from focusing on health education, providing basic health care services, accessibility, affordability, disease prevention, and to more social aspects of this approach, like community participation and social justice. And I just put one quotation here, which was very interesting. It was from one young community health worker in a poor village. When she was asked, how do you define comprehensive primary health care, it seems that this definition is from an expert, an international expert. To me, comprehensive primary healthcare means community participation in health programs, intersectoral collaboration, and social justice. Well planning, building close relationship with people and trust, health education, and increasing people's health awareness are all factors that help us achieving the goal. And finally, I would like to acknowledge the funding body, because this project is part of a global research, Revitalizing Health for All, which is part of the Tisdale Corti project. It's funded by a couple of Canadian health institutions, and I also acknowledge the contribution of my colleagues to conduct this research. Thank you.
So we'll now open it to questions. Before we do, I just want to make a few announcements. There is a sheet passing around. If you've signed in for any community health worker section events previously, you don't necessarily have to sign in now, but we use this to continue to be able to send you information on what the section is doing and opportunities and things that are available. So if you have not signed in at any of our events, please put your name on that sheet so we can send you information. We encourage you, if you have not joined the community health worker section, but you've been to several of our sessions, you should consider maybe you should join our section. So We're always looking for new members, and you can change your affiliation at any point if you decide that you would like to. So if you're not a part of the section, please consider doing so. We have a business meeting tonight at 6:30 for the section. This is an open meeting. Everyone is welcome to attend. And what you would learn at that meeting are what are the different things we are doing, what are opportunities that are available for you to participate, or just to see what's going on so you can maybe percolate about it for a year or so and see if you might want to participate in the future. So again, that's in your program, and all are welcome to that meeting tonight at 6:30. So with that, I'd like to open it up to questions to our presenters.
Mariana, do you have a curriculum when you do that first training in the department?
Yes, we have a curriculum that was built by professors at Fresno State based on evidence-based programs, other previous programs. But yeah, we have a curriculum available. If you would like to have access to it, I can provide you some information.
And one more question. Do you pay from the promotors?
Yes, they were paid to conduct.
How do you pay them? By monthly or just by?
Hourly, yeah. I believe there was about 100 hours per promotora to work with their participants, and each of them recruited maybe 15 to 20 participants, and they were paid by the hour.
I had a question about the Iran Community Health Program. You said there was a two-year training program. Was that 2 years on-the-job training along with a school-based training, or how did that work?
They've got initial training as well as in-service training. So before starting their job, they've got 2 years training, and this training is held in a training center. So they are recruited, and then they go for 2 years in their training centers. And then when they start their job after this two years training, they've got regular in-service training. So mostly they've got monthly meetings, and if a new program is implemented or a new policies or anything that need to be, to be trained, they've got extra meetings and training courses to be trained. But this 2 years training is before actually they start their job.
Can you talk at the microphone too?
Yes.
Your voice is a little quiet.
Okay. Yes. Yes. Yeah. The training is when the community health worker, this person, is selected, and over time the selection criteria changed a lot because when this program, community health workers program, started 30 years ago, a primary degree was required for their recruitment, but now it's a high school degree. So it's why the training content changed a little bit as well, because of higher educational level of these students. So after they are selected, they go to this. It's called Behvar's Training Center, and it's located at district level. They stay there. It's free, and they've got, they are provided free accommodation, meal, and no tuition fee. Everything is free for them. They stay for 2 years in these training centers, and they've got training curriculums and training materials, which covers all these health programs, and as well as some courses in communication skills and this kind of, so there are some courses on different health program, maternal and child health and different things. And when we looked at the current the content of training courses, we found that it changed a lot. It's mainly because their educational level increased, and of course the community needs increased, so they've got more topics on non-communicable diseases and even computer courses, English courses. Yeah, actually it's a very comprehensive training course.
Funded by the government?
Yes, yeah, it's run by government and it's paid by government, yeah. No, it's not. Yes, yeah. Yeah, no, they just go to that training. But in some cases and in some provinces, if the family doesn't like the person to go to another center for 2 years, they do provide facilities within that rural area for this person to be trained. And the good thing about the training course is that it's got some theoretical courses and topics, as well as some placements and practical courses. So one of the things that they were very, very satisfied, actually, I can say all of the community health workers we talked to were talking, and they were very satisfied for their training courses, because it's a very friendly environment. Their training center, their supervisors and the trainers, they've got very good relationship with them. And After, for example, every 4 to 6 months, they've got classes and theory courses. They go to rural settings to do some placements, and they are supervised by their supervisor. So, yeah, it's a very comprehensive course.
In the book?
The requirement for us, really, I think the most important requirement was to have previous experience working as a promotora or working with the community. And there was no educational requirement. Some of our promotoras had, a sixth grade education level. Others had a college level, but were working with the community. They didn't have like a full-time employment, and then in addition to that, being involved in the promotora. So the main requirement was having previous experience and also having the time to work with this person.
Did they have to have papers?
The promotoras? Mm-hmm. Yes, because they were hired by the university.
So I had multiple sources of funding that we piecemealed together, but the main one was Medica Foundation, which is a main health insurer in Minnesota. So I would say definitely look into your health provider foundations. They're quite interested in these kind of approaches.
In the back, in the light shirt, yes.
And actually, that, I think, was another requirement, too, for promotoras to be Latinas and speak the language, Spanish. I believe it is important because that addresses the level of trust as far as when participants share their problems, they know someone who understands their language, who understands where they're coming from, who understands their background. So I believe it is very important to have someone from their own culture and who speaks their language.
So I'll add to the discourse, because obviously we hired a Euro-American male as one of our community health workers. And our other gal was an Ecuadorian woman who had been in the US for quite some time and had a bachelor's degree. So, we brought this to community partners and we let them decide. When we interviewed our community health worker applicants, we had a range of people who applied, and a community partner co-interviewed with me. Of course, language is important, critical. And your question is interesting because a refugee experience, for example, in St. Paul, we have a high Hmong refugee community there. You know, having that refugee experience versus being a second generation Hmong, you know, born here person, I think that's a big discourse conversation. The trust, I think that if you talk to the families that Evan served, they trusted him a lot. He could not relate to some of their experiences, right? But there was a lot of trust. And if you look at the history of some of the other health professions, for so many years we haven't had a diverse workforce. We've had to establish trust on some levels. I think it makes it easier sometimes when you come from the community and you have the experiences. Sometimes being of the community creates a barrier, and we don't like to talk about that, but that is sometimes an issue. So I think it's a bigger discourse question, but I would say our experience certainly showed us that a health worker can serve a community that they don't necessarily come from.
In the red.
Actually, the community, do I speak loud enough?
Should she go to the microphone?
Yeah.
Please go to the microphone.
Okay, yeah. this program, when the primary health care program started in Iran after the Al-Mu'atta declaration, actually community health worker program was part of this approach. So from the start point, these people are considered as a health staff, but in order to increase their the sustainability of the program, so the plan is that to recruit them from rural area, and they are committed to stay in their own villages for a couple of years. So they are paid by government, by health system. They are trained by health system. Actually, they are a staff member of the Iranian Ministry of Health and Health System. But because they are one of the, you know, members of that rural area and they live in that area, so it's, you know, helped to sustain the program over time. And their payment is one of the reasons that, and they are permanent employee of the health system. It's not gonna end, you know, after, you know, they get retired. Yeah.
There are many countries around the world where community health workers are standard parts of the healthcare system. I think in the United States we're challenged because we have a large number of high-level health professionals. We have basically enough physicians for our population, maybe not quite enough nurses, but nothing in comparison to what many countries are faced with. And those countries have had no choice but to develop a system that allows other health professionals to be direct service providers and funded through the government. And we need to look at these systems and see how we can incorporate some of these models within our own country as well.
I have a follow-on question to that. Do the CHWs do invasive procedures? And I want to give you an example. Our CHAPs, our community health aides practitioners in Alaska, very much the same situation. They're the only healthcare game in town out of the remote rural villages of Alaska. But they're also trained as basic EMTs.
in Iran.
I apologize. Also, are they trained like that in that two-year training time or during the in-service later?
Mainly during the in-service training, yeah. Yeah, and in response to what you said, you are absolutely right. But I don't think it's the case in Iran because, as I showed in the first few slides, the structure of primary health care in Iran, every 5 health house with these community health workers are under the supervision of a rural health center. And in this rural health center, we've got at least one GP and a couple of other allied health midwife and, you know, dental technicians. So, and the referral system when in the first step the people comes to community health workers, and the second level, they refer the patient to this rural health center, which is not very far from villages, the way that they are established and distributed. So they've got access to a GP, at least, you know, if they are referred to a higher level. Yeah.
The Iranian is very interesting, and I think that in my understanding of the health worker program, of course, at one end of the spectrum, namely the community health worker is an employee of the health service, part of the health team. The other end of the spectrum, of course, is volunteer promoters of health in many Central American and South Asian and African. Now, the Brazilian model is not dissimilar from the Iranian, where, again, community health workers are part of the family health team. They're based at the health centers, and they go out into their neighborhoods. I think that all of these models can work, and I also think, although I'm not sure you're implying, that community health workers have a very important role even in the so-called advanced countries. I think that even where you've got, at least on paper, an adequate ratio of physicians or nurses, you'll always find that there's huge inequity in their distribution, that poorest communities cannot access them easily, and that community health workers can perform a great number of roles. There's now a huge evidence base that community health workers have been able to perform many therapeutic functions as well as intervention functions. Of course, the key thing, which I think operates very well in Iran, and that's something that Sarah's work, is the support and supervision they get from the primary level of care.
Thank you, David. Here I would like to thank Professor David Sanders. He's one of the chief investigators at global level who lead actually this Tisdale-Corti project. Thanks for coming and for your comment.
Well, and I would like to challenge us as a country and as a group when we're discussing this to think about, because we're at a time of healthcare change in this country and we're redefining what is our healthcare system, hopefully. Hopefully we'll get the opportunity to do that. And we have an expectation in this country, it feels, to receive the majority of our health care directly from doctors and nurses. And there is a different expectation in other parts of the world. I am a physician. I am not good at many of the things that the community health workers are good at. I'm not good at it. I'm not going to be good at it. I don't have time to do it. I'm too expensive to do it. It's not a reasonable model. There's no way that I should be the one working with you on adherence. I'm not good at it. I'm not the right one. That I should be the one working in the home on environmental remodeling or things like that. So there are many parts of healthcare which I think right now are currently misplaced. And because they're misplaced, they are getting either inadequately addressed or not addressed at all, which is resulting in many of the disparities that we see. So if we can challenge our system to incorporate many of the different models that we see in other parts of the world, I think that we can have better health care for everyone.
And I would just add, I mean, keeping cognizant that here in the United States, we're working with so many different populations that experience racism on a daily level, on a daily basis, and addressing that and really addressing how they are systematically excluded from many of the services that people are trying to link them with, and also keeping cognizant that international models are very effective and we should look to them, and keeping in mind that we have this strong racism component when dealing with these different, whether it be Southeast Asian and Latino communities.
On that point, I had a question for Carolyn. Your program was only for Latino families, and did you receive any resistance or questions? Why not anyone else? Did the other families say, well, hey, we got issues. We'd like someone to come talk to our kids. Just because we're not Latino, we don't get the service.
You know, this is a common question, and I think it comes up a lot. It came up internally at the U. It never came up out in the community. Folks were really quick to realize this is a pilot project. We don't know how it will work out. We're going to test it here. We're going to try it here, see how it works. This is starting with this community, and what we can learn can be applied, hopefully, to other groups. Too often, I think, historically, if we look, and your racism comment speaks to this, your elitism speaks to this, you know, our projects often start with a Euro group, and then we say, let's adapt it to African-American youth, let's adapt it to Latino youth. We were arguing very strongly, we're going to start with Latino youth, we're going to create this for our Latino families, and then we'll adapt if other groups want to look at it. And we didn't get that pushback.
Are there any other questions?
Sure, I mean, the data would certainly prioritize for some areas certain groups, and you can use that to further justify why you're writing your grant for this to serve this community first.
But I run a program for Puerto Rican teenagers, and we are never going to run a program specifically for one sub-ethnic group again, because on a day-to-day basis, we're in schools, and we have Mexican kids, and we have African-American kids, and we have white kids all in the same school, all in the same income level, all living in the same neighborhood, saying, what, you're offering this program to Puerto Ricans and not to us? And we say, well, okay, one in three Puerto Rican kids in this neighborhood has asthma. It's really high prevalence. No one's ever done interventions. You know, we have all these great reasons to justify why we're limiting our program to this one group who has actually experienced some of the most highest disparities ever in terms of asthma. But when you're in the one-to-one interaction with people, it feels terrible to give that response. It feels terrible, and you feel embarrassed. And it's a very difficult balance to be the investigator or the planner on the larger level, but also be the face on the community who's delivering the information to people who already feel discriminated against on many levels. And here's someone, again, telling them one more thing they can't have.
We certainly had that issue by schools, right? Why that school, not our school? So it comes up on many different levels. Not, you know, you can give numerous examples for why this group, why another. But this is an interesting, I would also challenge some of you to think in, when you're writing your grants, arguing for an effectiveness trial as opposed to an efficacy trial, because the arguments for efficacy trials are, well, you need to be as narrow as possible to prove it works before you expand it out. Well, if you do that, you end up in this situation. Well, then I can only work with Mexican girls because they don't treat Mexican girls the same as Colombian girls, Ecuadorian girls, you know, whatever. So in a peer efficacy trial, randomized controlled trial, you would have to argue for one ethnic group. My school system would have given a ton of pushback for that, a ton. But if I kept it broad to Latino, I didn't have as much, like I told you, I didn't have pushback in the school level because they understood start somewhere, move on. But NIH, they're gonna say, well, do efficacy, then do effectiveness. We have to argue it's not ethical to do efficacy trials in community-based participatory CHW-type projects. We need to do effectiveness trials, and these are some of the reasons. We just have to defend our reasons, but I would argue that's a better approach than saying, than following the traditional path and being so narrow to one group.
I'm just wondering, what is the base level that you're paying community healthcare workers? Is it minimum wage? You know, everybody knows how effective we are, and I keep hearing, and it happens to me, also more and more work, more and more work. Do this, now do this, now do this. This is, you're really good at this, this year, you're good at this. And the jobs that come in just piles and piles and piles, but the pay is not going as high as the work. And because people know how effective we are and how important we are, I think that they need to think about how we're getting paid.
This is such a great, great comment. In our pilot study, we originally proposed that our community health center would hire the community health workers. She was constrained by their organization's HR limits on salary, and because we were piloting with mental health, which is, we felt we needed a little bit more experience in the folks we hired, we needed to pay them more than we could recruit effectively. So their range was up around $9, $10 an hour. We hired at about $17 an hour. So it was unique, and again, sustainability becomes an issue, because if the school were to continue providing that service to families, more likely it's gonna fall onto their ELL staff, their English language learners, learner instructors, not their counselor social worker level. And those folks, their pay is probably in the 11 to 15 an hour.
But I also understand that some states have certification for promotoras and some don't. My license in New Mexico, we don't. And as a result, we don't get paid as much because we don't have
certification. I mean, it's complex. You pay $5,000 for a certificate that in Iran they give you the training for free plus pay you plus do a whole lot more. And reimbursement is being linked now to having the certificate or not, so it's a little bit complex.
And I would like to add something. I think that's why the importance of trying to have a sustainable source to fund Promotora projects, because that's the main problem. There's not, it's just like project here, project there, limited funding for this project, limited funding for this other project. And then they're not continuous. The programs end at some point. So that's why, as a policy recommendation, we were recommending to try to institutionalize the promotoras into the system. That way, it's continuous, it's sustainable, and promotoras don't have to go through what you are saying right now.
And at the state level in California, we're currently in conversations in terms of like bills that are being written around community health workers. To really stop trying to do the seven part course, you know, type things, and really start providing a sustainable and sustainable workforce, because it's also a social justice issue for the promotoras themselves. Yeah. Regardless of what you're gonna pay them, I mean, you can pay them like you know, $50 an hour, but if they're only gonna have the job for 2 months, you know,
that's right.
How is that sustainable for them to be healthy? Healthy people in their own community.
And, but keep in mind too, a lot of countries keep this role as volunteer.
Yes.
You know, in Mexico, they are a volunteer role. So scope of practice, all of that comes into play. The reimbursement in Minnesota, it's interesting, but you have to have they need to be working under the scope of a physician, which is very limiting for a school-based type model. They don't have physicians floating around there. And also the community clinics, I completely concur with your comment, because most of their community health workers, even though they might pay them for a year project or so, more often than not, they're grant-funded positions, not sustained roles as part of that clinic system.
In Chicago, when we do hire in community health workers, oftentimes we have to do independent contractors because of the limited nature of our duration, and also sometimes because of paper issues and things like that. But when we try to hire them, within my institution, there is no, HR has no job description for a community health worker, so we end up, I don't know, they're research assistant to something, you know, so you have to dig around, find a job description that's kind of close,
and that meets the pay scale that you've determined. So one thing we can all think of in terms of how to make internal change is to get our own institutions to recognize this profession as what it is, to have a standardized job description within HR and a pay scale that is reasonable and that we feel is ethical for the work that they do, so that in the future this doesn't every time happen. Someone gets a grant, someone wants to do community health workers, and then they have to go through the whole thing again. Which research level? You know, blah, blah, blah. So if we have a standardized within our institution setting for this job description with standardized benefits and a pay scale that is comparable, then that would be one way to, again, move the profession more towards stability. Any other comments? Well, and I know a lot of physicians, and I am, of course, saddened when I hear either physicians talk resistance towards these models, although I very rarely ever hear that. Now, I'm in a different place than you, so I'm hearing things on a different level, but what I hear from my colleagues are screams for help. We need help. Our patients are suffering. We cannot do what they need. We're not worried about our own billing necessarily, because including community health workers in our practice is not going to influence our salary or whatever. There's not that immediate threat. And I think just the bigger barrier is just not understanding what is the profession in the first place. Not resistance towards the help. We want the help. We just maybe don't all understand what is the help that's being offered to us. So I don't necessarily think that the major resistance in the big scheme of things is going to come from physicians. I think physicians are going to welcome more assistance. I think it's more a matter of paying by the funders and things.
I think we could talk after too, because it's a specific question, but obviously bringing some people who are key decision makers and sitting down and saying, okay, where is this role housed? Where is this person's physical space, maybe, might help support legitimizing who they are and where they are. But we could talk through some strategies.
And in response to whether the physicians know what community health workers are doing, what we instituted this year with a one-year grant was we have a team of five community health workers that go out and do presentations to doctors or anyone who wants, like schools for recruitment of new community health workers. But we have a very successful partnership now with the family physician training in Santa Rosa. And as we build that relationship, we're getting
you should talk with the New York folks. They've been doing that for a while, too. Mm-hmm. Let's have one final round of applause for our presenters. And thank you, everyone, for your comments and for joining us today.